Hello and welcome to another episode of Hank's A Lot, the comprehensive and encyclopedic podcast examining chronologically the many films of Mr. Tom Hanks. I, as always, am your host, Kent Shelton, and joining me this week on our cinematic odyssey from Hollywood, California, our film critic at large, Mr. Trace Oakley, and from Seattle, Washington, the wet and grimy town that everybody loves, our musical director, the supersonic Mr. Kevin Dennis. Hello, gentlemen. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, I feel icky with that introduction. But
we're here to celebrate Tom Hanks, as always. And boy, Greyhound is a movie I'd never seen, I'd never heard of. I don't know how it escaped my attention, because it seemed to be actually a movie made by professionals. It wasn't a home movie or anything. It's a real feature film, and you know, no.
It's not about a bus.
It's not about riding the bus. I could make a movie about some of my Greyhound experiences, and they'd be just as harrowing as this thing.
Someone died on a Greyhound bus.
I rode next to a corpse for several hours on a Greyhound one time. Yeah,
I found this movie had a lot less gunfire in it than the Greyhound bus experiences I've had. So,
yeah, somebody should make a movie about that Canadian Greyhound bus a couple of years ago, where the guy just went around the bus cutting everybody's heads off and throwing them out the window. Do you remember this news story?
But I'm going to look it up now.
I am too.
It was the scariest thing that ever happened in Canada. So, anyway. Before we keep talking about Canadian decapitations, wow!
How did we get here?
We'll get back to it.
We're 90 seconds into the show and we're at Canadian decapitations.
We'll get back to Canadian decapitations, but first let's have a review of this movie, and that calls for a jingle.
Well, now it's time for the review. Trace, please tell us, what is your view?
The year was 1957. Tom Hanks was a year old. Not too many people knew of him, save for his parents, their friends and relatives, and perhaps an occasional babysitter or pediatrician. But movies were being made, lo, these many years before this type grew up and shot to stardom. There was Bridge on the River Kwai, An Affair to Remember, Paths of Glory, The Sweet Smell of Success, 12 Angry Men, and The Seventh Seal. Garnering less notice was Zero Hour, a disaster flick about a commercial airline trip where numerous passengers and both the pilot and co-pilot became violently ill with food poisoning owing to bad fish served as the in-flight meal. Luckily, one of the passengers flew planes in the war and got people killed, but pilot experience is pilot experience, and he had the chicken. 23 years later, a movie came out called Airplane. This was not, as many believed, simply a send-up of the air disaster genre, which boasted such diverse titles as Airport, Airport 75, Airport 79, The Concorde. Airplane was actually a remake of Zero Hour. The plot, the main character's name, Ted Stryker, and yes, the fish, all carried over from Zero Hour to Airplane. The year is 2043. Tom Hanks is 86 years old and enjoying a career resurgence after playing the cantankerous dad to Shia LaBeouf in the stirring remake of Nothing in Common. That same year, an unheralded comedy called Battleship is released and does surprisingly strong box office. It's not, as many suggest, a spoof of the Tom Cruise, Will Smith, Grumpy Old Subterraneans franchise, or that beloved Disney smash, The Little Mermaid's Big Torpedo. Battleship is, in fact, a remake of a 2020 war film called Greyhound. In Greyhound, there's a war and a bunch of troops and some battleships and submarines. Some different countries are involved, and there's a bunch of shooting and a bunch of men die, and the commander is sad, but he's really religious, so that means he's good, and God is always right, so everyone who died was meant to. We see quite a few coffins draped with American flags, as is the custom with our war casualties. There's also the traditional practice of rifles being shot during these funerals. This makes about as much sense as someone who's stabbed to death being honored at their memorial by everyone tossing a machete or meat cleaver into the air. But it's an important reminder that guns are more important than human lives. Guns are fun, even at funerals, and they're terrific penis substitute when you're running low in that department. The screenplay, which is nothing more than a submarine instruction manual and glossary of war terms, is by the film's star, Tom Hanks. It offers plenty of opportunity for macho posturing, yelling, and chest thumping. The most human utterance in the movie is, "I need more coffee." So true. So heartbreaking. The script was based on a novel by C.S. Forster, not to be confused with E.M. Forster. The former is best known for The African Queen. The latter is best known for novels that seem dull because Merchant Ivory made such boring movies based on them. The actors successfully create an ensemble where everyone valiantly strives to achieve a level of adequacy. The only other named star is Elizabeth Shue, who plays Hank's wife. It's unclear whether the character is alive or a ghost like Hanks played in Ithaca. The shallow cookie-cutter wife characters in every Hanks period piece are so interchangeable, they could have been shot once and inserted into every movie. This film does feature another in a long line of foot mishaps in the Hanks canon. Here, Tom's feet are bleeding due to uncomfortable footwear. Fortunately, he remembers that Shue gave him slippers. The film was directed by Aaron Schneider, who fails to tell a story and fails to make us feel anything for the character. Not a single frame of this movie is remotely interesting. Greyhound's release was delayed and ultimately scrapped due to the COVID pandemic. It was picked up for distribution by Apple TV, the cult-like television and film wing of the cult-like tech giant. It's an odd fit for Apple, given that it's kind of a loud and energetic movie, as opposed to the legions of eye minions whose manner suggests it's illegal to not be chill. Ultimately, this is a movie that takes itself very seriously, is utterly humorless, and its absence of any sort of social commentary regarding war makes it complicit in accepting it. It has no reason to exist, except to be mercilessly parodied. My score? Don't leave the driving to Greyhound.
Well, there's the review that you were probably expecting. Speaking of things that take themselves really seriously and are humorless, our film critic, Trace Oakley.
Agreed!
Yeah, so this is an action-packed, plucky little movie. It held my attention, wrapped for 90 minutes. It was very... almost the entire movie takes place in the bridge and outer deck of this ship. It's such a small little, such a contained story. And yet I find it gripping, thoroughly believable. I really enjoyed it. I would happily watch it again. I think that if you are interested in history, it doesn't mean that you are a chest thumping war nut. It means that you, wow.
This is what a Thursday morning
looked like for this guy in World War II, a guy who was just trying to escort merchant ships through the most dangerous waters in the world. Fascinating story, well told, and I agree completely with our critic. 5 stars. don't worry, I'm gonna edit his review in post. Kevin, what were your thoughts?
I agree. Fantastic movie. I've actually watched it twice already. Jesus. So good, so good. I've already recommended it to a bunch of my friends. My problem, I only have 2 problems with it. They're only based in historical accuracy about the German submarine's transmissions, completely inaccurate. They would never do that. That would give away their position immediately. They would never taunt a ship like that. The second time I watched it, I thought maybe that's all in his mind. Maybe he's just, that's his fear, and he's thinking about that possibly. So that could have been a device for that. So the historical accuracy of most of it was very right on. The way they portrayed everything is historically accurate, very well telling the story of what it was like for those guys at that time, generally speaking, really good. I thought there was a lot of commentary about war when he was the first submarine that they sunk, when all the crew was cheering and he's not. And they were saying, yes, 30 more krauts to the bottom of the sea. And he went, yes, 30 more souls. I thought there was a lot of humanity there. A lot of, you know, I thought it was excellent. Very good.
Yeah, that subtext is so deep, you need a submarine.
Said the curmudgeon.
Yep.
The black-hearted curmudgeon.
No.
I'm really surprised that you didn't care for it. I mean, I thought it was really well done. Why did you not like it? Because,
well, you know, and part of it was it did remind me, I guess, if there's another movie that we've talked about on the show that I would compare it to. And for the same reason I didn't like this movie was Apollo 13, a movie that you guys both liked. And to me, it really was just almost all of the dialogue was technical jargon. And it just seemed to be, you know, look how expert we are at all this technical jargon and all.
And you don't
this.
Find that entertaining or powerful or good or of any value?
Not even the slightest bit. But I mean, Apollo 13 is a vastly, vastly superior movie to this.
I disagree. That's your opinion. It's not a fact.
If you made a period World War II piece that took place, 90% of it took place on the bridge of a destroyer under enemy fire, do you think they should be doing a lot of Oscar Wilde wordplay don't you think that that's how the guys on the bridge are speaking in technical jargon, because that's
their
how
job.
They communicate?
We talked about a movie a couple months ago called Captain Phillips, where there's a situation on a ship where they're under siege and their lives are in danger. And there was plenty of room in that movie for interesting, meaningful, moving dialogue that was not a bunch of technical jargon and not a bunch posturing.
But I thought this one did it. I thought this was period appropriate dialogue. There was plenty of compassion and heartfelt stuff and transferring of emotions and stuff between the crew when it was in that situation. So I disagree with you. I think that this had a lot of room for that, and they did it, I thought.
Yeah, I don't understand the criticism of macho posturing, because I saw a lot of guys who are sort of scared and under duress,
afraid,
trying their very best to work quickly. Mm-hmm. I didn't see anybody saying like, yeah, well, these krauts got nothing on us. Watch this. I saw a lot of full rudder, you know, 20 degrees right now. And
fear and mistakes and human stuff.
I didn't see any fear that seemed genuine. Everything was very surface. Everything was very just calculated and manipulative.
The
story didn't hold my interest, and there was not a second of it that in any way moved me or interested me.
Wow.
Well,
okay. I saw a different movie. I thought it was.
Yeah. Well, how much of this review is shaded by the fact that it was released by Apple,
and that you couldn't get to see the movie by Apple.
Had it been made by Netflix or made by some sort of, I don't know, if it had been a CBS after school movie, would have you liked it, or did you just hate Apple put it out?
Our audience should know that Trace had a lot of trouble watching this movie. Trouble getting to watch the movie because he tried to watch it through Apple. Well, Trace, you tell him what happened.
Yeah, I was trying to log on to a free trial on my Roku with Apple TV, and it just kept taking me in circles. You know, I would take the necessary steps and would just be.
So you had to buy the DVD to watch.
Well, no, then I spent an hour on the phone without. Right. The first thing it told me, I need to log into my iTunes account. So I go to iTunes on my computer. And of course, there's no place, which iTunes, I think, doesn't even.
So how much anger is actually versus Apple?
That's a very valid point. But I ended up having to order. I ended up having to order a DVD on eBay, and, you know, it took about a week to arrive. And so honestly, by the time I got the DVD, I was calmed down from that. Now check with me soon when we talk about the movie Finch, which is also only exclusively available through the Apple cult.
Yeah, did you ever check your email? I think I sent you a free link to the movie yesterday, and you haven't responded. So,
No, I did not.
Yeah, you should.
What's your favorite movie of all time, Trace?
My favorite movie of all time.
Yeah, just what is it?
Probably Local Hero.
Okay, what if Local Hero was only available on Apple TV? Would it still be your favorite movie?
I have the DVD, so it would not be a concern. I would say, even cult members are, you know, right once in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. Most of the people who,
it's local.
Most of my fellow Branch Davidians were just good folks.
It's not just a movie. It's a lifestyle.
It's a streaming platform like anything else. You're the only one who thinks that Apple TV has some kind of mystical hold on its viewers. It doesn't.
So that podcast I listened to about the cult of Apple, that's just all in my mind.
It's a podcast. You should never believe a podcast.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that it is all in your mind, because I don't think there is a podcast about the cult of Apple. But there's only 6 podcasts, and this technically
this
counts
is one
as
of
two of
them.
Yeah, there's us. There's the Flophouse, Joe Rogan, and those guys who eat unhealthy fast food and talk about it. The Doughboys. I think those are the only podcasts currently being produced. So.
Yeah, this Greyhound movie might actually be better than the Joe Rogan podcast. But I don't know.
it's gotta be
else that I would say that.
Well, that I think the Joe Rogan podcast probably has problems with us because we reviewed Apollo 13, and Joe Rogan thinks that the moon landing was a hoax. So,
really?
Oh yeah, he talks about.
Oh, brother, what an idiot!
Come on, we've never produced a rocket that could actually get a capsule to the moon. It's all just a Hollywood fiction. So that's my expert Joe Rogan impression.
Well, let me do an expert impression of somebody who's talking to Joe Rogan. You're an idiot. Okay, next.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan's favorite movie, speaking of favorite movies, I believe is...
Why are we talking about Joe Rogan?
I think it's The Money Pit, if I remember.
I already said it. Too late. Nice try.
Well, you know,
great
this
movie.
This has put a song in my heart, and it's made me want to talk about music. Anything interesting to say about the score before we segue into your musical masterpiece of the week, Kevin?
Well, Blake Neely did the music. I thought the music was very good, very understated, perfectly tuned to the tone of the movie. He's done not a lot. Most people would know he did The Flash. Recently, Masters of the Air, which is also an Apple production, which I've not watched because this is where I agree with Trace. Here's where I agree with Trace. It's also a World War II movie that looks too plastic. So at any rate, the music was excellent as far as holding its tone. There was only 2 other songs in it that were Christmas songs. The song I'm going to do this, I think this is going to be the very first movie that I do with no words. It's going to be just my plan is to do it. It's just an instrumental piece because I already have a theme for it. So anyway,
it will feature empty dialogue, kind of like the movie.
it will be mostly expressing the dead heart of a curmudgeon who hates the world and wants to inflict as much darkness as he can. No, it's going to be
It will be stirring and energetic, just like the film.
It'll be stirring. Yeah, that's kind of the idea.
That's it. Hey, you know, folks, tell us what you think. Watch the movie. watch it twice, and watch it, and please watch it through the Apple platform.
Subscribe to the Apple platform. Yes. Please, if there's a lifetime membership, try to join that.
If at the end of the month you find you have a couple extra dollars left over in your bank account, just send them to Apple.
Donate it.
Because they'll know.
In care of Trace Oakley.
Yeah.
Say donate it in his name.
The Apple folks.
In his name we pray.
They're looking out for you.
where do you order your matching tennis shoes?
At the Trace Oakley website.
the tennis shoes they're given to us by the Allfather so that we can join the Comet Tail. We have to be wearing these shoes.
Hallowed be thy name.
Yeah. Well, we would love to hang out and talk all night, but Kevin and I have to
Some Kool-Aid to drink.
We have to upgrade our operating systems.
I got to download some more stuff, man.
We have to lay down and upgrade our operating systems so that we can be Kent and Kevin 14.1 tomorrow. So, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. We have to have our new orders from Apple. they'll be downloaded as we sleep.
As we sleep.
All right. Enjoy this song composed by our own Kevin Dennis. A stirring reminder of what we enjoyed so much. Except for Trace, in Greyhound. And until next time, thanks a lot.
Well, you made it through another episode of Hanks a Lot, the Tom Hanks podcast. Our show is recorded and mastered at Cliffside Studios in Spokane, Washington. Your hosts are Trace Oakley, Kevin Dennis, and me, Kent Shelton. Please send corrections, comments, and indecent proposals to hankspodcast@gmail.com. Tom Hanks has not been consulted or compensated and knows nothing about what goes on here. All music used on the show is composed and performed by our own Mr. Kevin Dennis. Thank you for listening. Tell your friends. Come back next week and bring your sister. And please rate and review us on your favorite podcast catcher. Thanks for the support, and goodbye.